This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us for a special pre-recorded program. We'd like to start with a message from VOA Director Amanda Bennett.
And I'm Director of Voice of America. I'm recording this from home because here at Voice of America, almost all of us are now working remotely in order to help slow the spread of the coronavirus that I know has been affecting so many of you and your families. I just wanted to let you know that while the health and safety of our employees is really our primary concern, we also are aware that during this troubling time, you are increasingly turning to us for the factual, unbiased information that you need to make decisions about your lives. So we are working as hard as we can to keep up as much of our programming as we can during this time. You may notice some changes in the shows that you've been used to watching, and some of them may have to go off the air. If that happens, we will keep you informed as to where you can find the content that you're used to seeing. So I'd like to wish you all good luck and good health, and thank you very much. We'll hopefully be here for you. Thank you.
I'm your host, Yehiz Wahib, and here is what's coming up. African countries are taking extraordinary measures to combat the coronavirus and to protect mountain gorillas from the virus. Virunga Park in eastern DRC's North Kivu province will be closing temporarily. So, we'll have these stories and more ahead on today's pre-recorded special presentation on The Voice of America. Our top story, as the coronavirus spreads across the continent, African countries are taking extraordinary measures, from curtailing travel links to banning public gatherings. Economic experts say the fast-growing health crisis could deeply impact the continent's economies. The UN estimates GDP growth will dip from an average of 3.2% to 1.8% this year. Fears are also growing that the launch of the African Continental Free Trade Area could be delayed.
African officials have confirmed 640 cases and 16 deaths from the coronavirus on the continent across 34 countries. But according to John Nkangasong, director of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, those numbers will soon rise as the continent realizes it has not identified everyone traveling to the region with the virus.
This virus is a deadly enemy we are dealing with, and we cannot look at our numbers and be complacent. It's going to change dramatically next week.
Nkangasong says that despite health officials' best efforts, there are almost certainly people walking around with the virus and transmitting it to others.
There are three scenarios that are happening or might be happening. One is, scenario one was early on, before we started having the dialogue, there were no cases, that we are waiting for the cases to come. Scenario two is cases started coming in, we picked some, and we are doing the appropriate things of containing them, that is isolating them, keeping them. But then scenario three is that people are coming in and they are slipping through and we are not picking them. It's very likely. I think that is scenario two and three are very likely.
Nkangasong also said that Chinese health officials had greatly stepped up their support for the continent by holding a video conference with leaders of African health institutes. The coronavirus outbreak began in the Chinese city of Wuhan and has killed more than 3,200 people in China.
China yesterday started sharing more information with a whole host of individuals, public health leaders across the continent. They had a conference, a video conferencing or a conference call yesterday with so many leaders across the continent to explain their experience, which we really value, because understanding how to fight the virus will also depend on how much we know the virus.
He said the Africa Centers for Disease Control have received 2,000 coronavirus tests from China and are expecting another 10,000 next week. A growing number of African countries are closing their airspace, land and sea borders to prevent the spread of the virus. Nkangasong said that such actions were not always justifiable. But, he added, many countries were acting through the lens of a national security threat, a serious economic threat, and a humanitarian threat. Simon Marks for VOA News Addis Ababa.
Political unity is a rare sight in South Africa, but the nation's top politicians put on a convincing show yesterday as the burden of novel coronavirus cases topped 100. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The spread of novel coronavirus seems to have turned everything upside down in South Africa, including its usually fractious politics. As cases surged past 100 for the first time, the nation was also treated to a startling show of political unity from President Cyril Ramaphosa and his bitterest political opponents. The president and his rivals stood side by side at a Cape Town news conference, although they intentionally kept their distance and did not touch each other except for elbow bumps. A smiling Ramaphosa addressed reporters.
We all agree that this is an unprecedented moment. We have not seen anything as serious as this confronting the entire nation. And we agree that regardless of our political persuasions, our political differences, all of us share a common desire to keep our people safe, but also to mitigate the impact of this virus on the lives of our people.
Ramaphosa also said political leaders had discussed issues of inequality that could impact efforts to stop the virus. Many lower-income South Africans lack basic services at home and rely on crowded public transportation services where the virus could easily spread. Just a month ago, firebrand politician Julius Malema and his economic freedom fighters staged a demonstration in Parliament that delayed Ramaphosa's annual State of the Union address. On Wednesday, however, these words came out of Malema's mouth.
As the EFF, we fully support the initiative of government and we call upon all South Africans to listen to the leadership of our government and follow exactly as we are told.
John Steenhuising, leader of the Pro-Business Democratic Alliance, also praised the president and appealed to customers and entrepreneurs to act responsibly.
I would like to make an appeal in two aspects, South Africans, to the private sector and big business, particularly, to get involved in the effort. This is going to require the best efforts of all South Africans to come together to fight this virus and the effects on our economy. It's not a time for anyone to be sitting back on their hands.
But everyone is wondering, will this camaraderie last? Political analyst Karima Brown thinks it will, at least through the crisis.
Political parties, even such as the Freedom Front Plus, acknowledge that the president isn't in denial about the extent of the crisis. And as a consequence, there's goodwill and there's the generosity of spirit, which is very, part of the underlying fabric of South African social society. We are deeply divided, but we are also a society that is able to rally in times of crises. We've done it before, and we are doing it now.
Because she said if the Rainbow Nation can make it through the grueling, violent end of the apartheid system and emerge better for it, it can work through this too. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Nairobi's Kibera section is one of Africa's largest and most crowded urban slums. Most Kibera residents lack proper housing and running water, two factors that make the area prone to the coronavirus. Authorities are doing what they can to keep the population safe. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Kenyan authorities reported three new corona cases Wednesday, a couple from Spain and a Burundian who came from the United Arab Emirates. The country now has a total of seven cases. No cases have been reported in Kibera yet, but residents of the vast slum are concerned as a crowded living quarters will make it difficult to fight the deadly virus if it begins to spread there. Hesbon Kodek, who lives alone in a single room in Kibera, says poor hygiene compounds the problem.
We have a pit latrine there, but the neighbors, you know, we are more than 100 rooms, you know, but sharing one toilet is a bit complex.
And more so, you find that the water, you know, you find that there's a problem with water. Sometimes on Friday, there's no water, you know, it's a bit complex.
33-year-old Sylvester Okoth, a father of two who lives a single room with his family, he says they are trying to do everything possible to be safe from the virus. He says, I have left to God, but on the cleanness part, we are trying to wash our hands, and the place we sleep, we keep it clean. On the shared bathroom and toilet, as people who share, we decided to make sure all of us make the initiative to keep them clean. and keep the environment clean. Health Minister Mutahi Kagwe said they are taking measures to prevent the outbreak of the disease in crowded areas like Kibera.
We have got a team in the Ministry of Health that is going to start going around within those slum areas so that they can be able to talk to them and tell them what to do and tell them how to behave. And these are the areas we are saying that we are asking the county governments to take serious measures as far as cleanliness is concerned. We are also asking the Ministry of Water, and they are assisting us to do so, to ensure that these areas have water.
Witnesses in Kibera say they have received leaflets educating the residents on the coronavirus. Kodek said he took issue with one particular recommendation.
Stay at home as much as possible. But how can we stay at home when you need food to put in your mouth? But the question to ask myself, no? How can you stay, actually, really? So if this thing is going, it's a pandemic, it's going to kill us, all of us. How can you stay at home when there's no food?
Among Kenya's neighbors, Somalia, Ethiopia, and Tanzania have reported cases of the virus. There are more than 500 reported cases across the continent, but only deaths so far in Burkina Faso. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Fighting the coronavirus outbreak is the latest battle in worn, torn, battered Libya. The UN-recognized government of national accord has suspended all flights at Misrata Airport, ordered border crossings closed, suspended prayers at mosques, and advised people to pray at home. The rival Libyan National Army in the east imposed curfews and sanitized common areas. The World Health Organization representative in Tripoli warned of great risks if the virus spreads while Libya is fragmented by warring sides. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Wolfgang Porstai, a senior analyst of the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations, about whether such measures are enough to prevent the spread of the virus in Libya.
Comparing with other countries, these measures are certainly not enough, not strict enough. If you have a look at countries who really managed to contain the virus, like Singapore, Japan, or South Korea, neighboring China, they have imposed much more stricter measures. The problem is that the number of unknown cases during the first weeks of the diseases, is significantly higher than the number of known cases. Also, those who have no symptoms yet are already infectious, and that's the real danger. And this could be already the case also in Libya. Therefore, the earlier and the more strict the country reacts, the more likely the number of infections can be limited, or at least can be stretched over a longer period of time in order to avoid to overload the health system.
But Libya has a unique situation. There is no central government controlling the entire country, so what's going on between the two warring parties in the east and in the west in terms of trying to contain the spreading of the virus outside of their areas?
Actually, the measures on both sides of the country are quite similar. In the east, the Ministry of Health of the interim government is in charge of containing and fighting the coronavirus. The LNA has established a committee to combat the virus, and they are working and coordinating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They have established medical quick intervention teams. They are in standby to react if there is an information about the coronavirus. All borders are closed in the east and in the west, but it's not easy to enforce this. We are talking about several thousand kilometers. Schools and universities are closed. Many mosques, shops, bars and restaurants, as well as some markets. In the east, on Wednesday, a curfew was imposed from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. by the Minister of the Interior. Keeping the general poor situation of Libya's health system, as well in the east, as well as in the west, in mind, to be honest, I really doubt that the country is prepared for the virus. Several returnees are under quarantine, but this is not really organized. Most of them are under a self-imposed quarantine. Altogether, the measures are neither in the east nor in the west strict enough to contain the virus, if this virus fully hits Libya. And when this is the case, and when the number of cases is increasing, it is already too late, as Italy shows in a very tragic way.
The World Health Organization representative in Tripoli warned of great risks if the virus spreads while Libya is fragmented by warring sides, and a statement by Western and Arab countries on Tuesday urged the two sides to stop fighting to allow authorities to respond to the corona threat. Would that threat convince the warring sides to reach a ceasefire?
No. For the time being, it does not look like there could be a ceasefire anytime soon. There is no indication for this. As we are talking right now, there is tough fighting going on in southern suburbs of Tripoli and in some locations south of Misrata. But let's hope that this will not be the case. But if Libya is also fully affected by the coronavirus, and if the fighters in Tripoli and the population of Tripoli would be fully infected, I guess this could change. But for the time being, not yet.
That was Wolfgang Porstei, a senior analyst of the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Because of the rapidly unfolding COVID-19 virus, Virunga National Park in eastern DRC's North Kivu province will be closing temporarily starting Monday. The temporary closure is being undertaken as a precautionary measure in line with the World Health Organization's recommendations. For Virunga in particular, scientific studies indicate that primates, including mountain gorillas, are likely susceptible to complications arising from the coronavirus. So park officials say they must remain steadfast in safeguarding the population of these endangered species. You're listening to a special recorded program on VOA Africa. I'm your host, Yehiz Wahib, in Washington. Here is a recap of our top stories on today's special recorded presentation. African countries are taking extraordinary measures to fight the coronavirus. And to protect mountain gorillas from the virus, Virunga Park in eastern DRC's North Kivu province will be closing temporarily. VOA is experiencing some technical difficulties. We are offering this program recorded earlier. We aim to return to our normal programming within a few days. And in the meantime, thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. A year after eastern Zimbabwe was hit by Cyclone Idai, one of Africa's worst tropical storms on record, some survivors are still recovering. The cyclone killed hundreds of people in Zimbabwe and left thousands homeless. Authorities have been rebuilding, but many are still living in temporary housing, as Columbus Mavunga reports from Chimanimani district on the border with Mozambique.
Flooding from Cyclone Idai swept through villages in eastern Zimbabwe a year ago, leaving nearly 700 people dead or missing and destroying or damaging almost 50,000 homes, according to officials. Sitting next to his fowl run with less than 5 chickens, his only sign of wealth, 33-year-old Muchaneta Maputire is one of the thousands that survived but had to move into a temporary structure because his house was ruined. 1 year later, Maputire continues waiting to get into permanent housing. He says what really troubles him and others is while they are in temporary structures, there is no development they can do. He points to some trees he has planted since last year when he started living in a tent with his wife and 7-month-old son. Maputre adds that when it is raining, they are tormented and fear their shelter will be destroyed, just like during Cyclone Idai last year. The International Organization for Migration says 24,000 Zimbabwean families affected by Cyclone Idai in Zimbabwe are still in need of permanent shelter. July Moyo, Zimbabwe's Minister of Local Government, Public Works and National Housing, says President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government is aware of the housing problem, but the top priority is repairing roads and bridges damaged or washed away by the storm.
We are now building back better. And in one case, we were assisted by the South African Defense Forces, which built two bell bridges at Kopa. The roads that are still needed to be done, where we need is to go to the economic areas, such as in the areas of Chikuba area. So there's a lot of work that is still need to be done, but the ministry is now leading the reconstruction and building back better than what was there.
The United Nations Office for Project Services is managing the Zimbabwe Idai Recovery Project with $100 million in grants from the World Bank and the African Development Bank. Jibrila Manzini, the head of UNOPS in Zimbabwe, says UN agencies such as FAO and the WFP are helping affected communities recover through food handouts, livestock and crop assistance.
So things are happening in terms of immediate recovery response, and the longer medium-term recovery are also taking place. We have started reconstruction of community roads. We have two roads in Chimanimani and two roads in Chipinge that are labor-based. So it's also in order to engage the population, engage the communities in those works. And there are a lot of assessments also that have been taking place in terms of schools, the school damaged in those areas. And what we're looking at is really building back better. So that takes also a little time, because the intention is not just repairing what is there, but really reconstructing for something that would last.
That is also what Maputire and thousands of others whose homes were destroyed by Cyclone Idai in Zimbabwe last year in March are hoping for. Permanent homes that can withstand the cyclones to come. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Chimanimani District, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up the special VOA Africa program. I'm your host, Yehiz Wuhib, in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you. Thank you again for tuning in to this recorded program while VOA resolves its technical issues. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.